Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, February 10th, 2022. Fort Stockton Man and Daughter Missing in Big Bend by Allegra Hobbs. Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Big Bend National Park. A team of state and federal agencies have been searching Big Bend National Park for Fort Stockton residents Hector Flores Jr., 49, and his daughter Luna Flores, 9, who entered the park on January 28th and have since gone missing. A vehicle belonging to Hector Flores Jr., a blue 2005 Dodge 1500 truck, was discovered near a campsite on the northern end of the park's remote Old Ore Road on the afternoon of Saturday, February 6th, by a park employee who was patrolling the area. According to National Park Service, NPS, spokesman Tom Vandenberg. Though the father and daughter were nowhere to be seen, their gear had been left behind at the site, and many of their personal belongings were in the car. Investigators believe the pair may be traveling on foot and it may not be dressed properly or have the proper equipment to camp in the park. Photo courtesy of National Park Service, Hector Flores Jr., 49, and Luna Flores, 9. The search for the missing father and daughter began that afternoon and has continued through the week, involving searchers from U.S. Border Patrol, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and the Texas Department of Public Safety. The Federal Bureau of Investigation is also assisting in the search and is soliciting tips from anyone who may have knowledge of the Flores' whereabouts. A crew of 10 has been on the ground searching the area, and both Border Patrol and DPS have deployed aircrafts to assist in the search. When reached by phone on Tuesday, Hector Flores Sr., father of Hector Flores Jr. and grandfather of Luna, told the Big Bend Sentinel that he and his wife were on their way to the park from their home in San Antonio. They had received a call from NPS on Saturday when his son's truck was discovered and were surprised to learn he had been in the park at a time when temperatures were dangerously plummeting. "We were surprised he was out there," said Flores, "especially that he was out there Friday. It was very cold out there, and there was a lot of ice at the time." In the late night hours of Thursday, February 3rd, and in the early morning hours that Friday, temperatures in the park dipped into the single digits. "Both of them liked to be outdoors, mostly fishing and camping," said Flores. "I just don't know why they went this time of year when it's pretty cold out there." In fact, the elements faced by Flores Jr. and Luna are of the utmost concern to the searchers, said Vandenberg. "The big concern, I think, on everybody's mind is it was cold," he said. "Those are some cold, cold nights." Old Ore Road is a fairly remote part of the park, one of Big Bend's designated primitive backcountry roads, which requires a high-clearance four-wheel drive vehicle. There are 9 campsites spread out along the 26-mile road, which takes about 3.5 hours to traverse from beginning to end. A backcountry permit is required to use the road's campsites. The northern end of the road, where Flores' vehicle was found, is much rougher than the southern half, per a ranger tip on the NPS website. "We're hoping for the best, praying for the best," said Flores Sr. Anyone with information about the missing father and daughter are urged to call the FBI tip line at 1-800-CALL-FBI 800-225-5324. Tips can also be submitted online at tips.fbi.gov. Those submitting tips can remain anonymous. This is a developing story. The Big Bend Sentinel will provide updates online as more information becomes available. City of Marfa and Chinati Foundation work together to address aging sewer system. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. For years, the 3.5 miles of century-old clay sewer pipes beneath the Chinati Foundation have fallen into a state of disrepair and have even begun to leak. There are few signs above ground other than a crown of weeds above the old lines, but neighbors worry that conditions could take a turn for the worse. Despite a protracted back-and-forth with the city of Marfa and the state agency responsible for environmental safety, a timeline for the necessary repairs is still inconclusive. For the Chinati Foundation, the solution isn't as simple as calling the donors that flock to Marfa each October for the museum's major fundraiser. While the lines are located on private property, and the responsibility of sewer maintenance generally falls to property owners, the Chinati Foundation's miles of underground sewer pipes receive waste from around 40 city customers who live on South Yale Street, also known as Officers Row. Figuring out how to address the issue has summoned complicated questions about the relationship between the two entities and the future of development in Marfa. Clearly, the cost to replace 3.5 miles of lines for 40 customers isn't an economic option for any prudent utility, wrote Patty Akers, a lawyer retained by the city of Marfa, in an email to the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, on October 22, 2020. Combined with the legal inability to bring these lines into compliance, makes it impossible for the city to respond in a conventional manner. According to the TCEQ, the responsibility of repairing the pipes falls to the city of Marfa, which was handed a notice of violation by the agency on September 25, 2020. Since then, the city has been granted numerous extensions. The paper trail suggests the city has been treated with leniency by the state due to the uniqueness of the situation. But water quality violations of this kind can carry fines of up to $25,000 a day should the agency decide to crack down. Since wastewater is collected at South Yale Street and routed through the Chinati Foundation property, the official violation reads, "The system of collection for wastewater located on Chinati Foundation's property is considered to be a part of the City of Marfa's wastewater collection system." At an October 13, 2020, council meeting, the City Council contracted the Presidio-based engineering firm Kleinman Consultants to review their wastewater collection system and ensure it met state standards. The foundation and the city have been in correspondence about fixing the problem for years. In 2018, Chinati's former director of planning and preservation, Peter Stanley, had a conversation with former city manager Terry Brechtel and city attorney Teresa Todd about the state of the wastewater system on the foundation's campus. The three decided to draft a letter of understanding that would be presented to the city council in hopes of gathering more information about granting easements for maintenance. "We started that process, but nothing happened after that," Stanley recalled. In June 2020, with the signs of wear substantially worse, Stanley contacted the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, investigators Joseph Miller, began looking into the complaint. He reached out to Todd to ask if the system underneath Chinati was used as a conveyance for other City of Marfa customers. Todd consulted former Public Works Directors Robert Silva and Jeff Boyd for more background. Silva and Boyd confirmed that the City of Marfa had never used the Chinati Foundation's system for conveyance. It was a separate, self-contained water and sewer system that predated any city water or sewer infrastructure in that area, Todd wrote back to Miller in an email dated July 30, 2020. Rather than conveying sewage through Chinati lines, the city actually receives sewage from Chinati and private landowners at Fort D.A. Russell. Throughout her correspondence with the state, which the Big Bend Sentinel obtained through a public records request, Todd reminded officials of the unique history of the sewer lines beneath the Chinati Foundation, which was once a military installation. Fort D.A. Russell and the hardworking sewer lines beneath it date back to the Mexican Revolution, when fears of cross-border violence led the U.S. military to take an interest in the humble railroad town of Marfa. According to Mona Garcia, who played a major role in getting Fort D.A. Russell registered as a National Historic Site, local ranchers pitched in to pull together land for a fort. Garcia currently owns and operates a museum out of Building 98, the former officers' club. She estimates that her sewer line, which was part of the original self-contained fort system, was constructed sometime between 1910 and 1920. Neighborhood lore alleges that German prisoners of war held at Fort D.A. Russell built Chinati's sewer system, but Garcia doubts that rumor. The POWs didn't arrive until 1943. In its heyday, there were over 9,000 men stationed at the fort, necessitating 3.5 miles of clay pipe to deal with the wastewater of thousands of men living in close quarters. When the fort was decommissioned in 1946, there wasn't a need to keep the pipes up to serve that many people. As a result, the sewer system didn't have its first major upgrade until the early 1990s. According to email correspondence between Todd and the TCEQ, at that time, the sewer system was discharging wastewater into Alamito Creek. The state intervened and required the city to construct a lift station to receive sewage from Chinati and customers inside the former military base and route it toward the sewage treatment plant. In October 1991, the city filed a permit to expand its wastewater treatment plant, and the lift station was constructed shortly thereafter with funding from the Rio Grande Council of Governments. The Dia Foundation had sold the 340-acre property to Donald Judd just a few years prior, in 1987. Judd then began realizing his vision of a concept of a museum in which art, buildings, and the natural environment form a unity, according to the Chinati Foundation's website. During the early 90s, sewer system overhaul. The Chinati Foundation was up and running, but nowhere near as busy as it is today. A handful of its signature installations had yet to be built. In the days before the Airbnb boom, coming to Chinati was a much more solitary experience. Since the art would never be exhibited in big city museums, people wanting to see and experience it would have to make a pilgrimage to Marfa, Todd explained in an email to TCEQ dated July 17, 2020. In a town where "What would Donald Judd do?" is a popular bumper sticker slogan, that question still looms for many, even so far as to guide city policy. The simple truth is that Donald Judd did not want the city anywhere near his property or his sewer lines. Mr. Judd's foundation has now inherited the consequences of their founder's notoriously intransigent nature and decades of inaction, Todd wrote. According to former Public Works Director Robert Silva, one time he couldn't get access to the property at all, so he climbed over a Tenati fence to unclog a line that was causing a sewer emergency for a neighbor. Mr. Judd came out, yelled at him, and kicked him off his property. Stanley questioned whether the now-deceased Judd's behavior 30 years ago should factor into the handling of the present-day problem. In terms of trying to judge what Judd would have wanted, that's a tricky thing, and something we try not to do as a standard, said Stanley, who emphasized that he no longer can speak on behalf of the Tenati Foundation, but had spent years looking at the world through their operational lens. I've heard this before, that the city reached out a number of decades ago, and Judd rebuffed those efforts. Knowing what I know about Judd, I'm not surprised by that. But again, that was decades ago. Another former Tenati employee had a different recollection of the famed artist. "I don't think Don was that way. He always liked to help," remembered Eliseo Martinez, who worked for Judd for 16 years and for the Tenati Foundation for 4. He's also owned a home on Officers Row, linked to the aging sewer lines since 1965. He wasn't present for Mr. Silva's hasty exit from Tenati Foundation grounds, but spent many years observing Judd and the city work together and navigate each other's red tape. In Martinez's time working maintenance for Tenati alongside Stanley, roughly 2011 through 2015, the city and the Tenati Foundation came together numerous times to solve problems. "We had a big problem with a line that busted," he recalled. "The city had to help us. They fixed it. They were always there." Another time, the city came with sophisticated tools to help fix a blockage. "We told them, just send a bill to Tenati." And they said, "No, no, it's no problem. That's our job, to make sure the water in the sewer and everything is working good." As the Tenati Foundation has grown, 49,000 people made the pilgrimage in 2019, so have the problems for the neighbors. "We have more than once had our bathroom fill up with sewage," said Garcia. "This happens when hundreds of people come all at once for Tenati weekend." The problems don't end with fluctuations in tourists. The neighborhood is growing too, and that growth has been hindered by the aging sewer lines. With a row of condos recently constructed at the Presidio on Farm Road 2810, and rumors of a new development swirling, figuring out how to better service new neighbors will be a top priority. "I've never worked on anything like this. Most violation issues are not this complicated," said Todd. "They don't involve this many moving parts or this kind of history. This is a very unique situation." Because the city of Marfa doesn't have the budget for the needed repairs, seeking grants will be an important part of the process. Tenati Foundation Director Jenny Moore was optimistic about the ability of her organization to work with the city of Marfa to address the situation. "We appreciate the significant effort the city is currently making to address these concerns as development continues in the neighborhood, putting further strain on an outdated system. We look forward to partnering with the city in support of improvements to the municipal sewer system and a positive outcome for this essential community service." For Martinez, who was born and raised in Marfa, any investment in the infrastructure of the Tenati Foundation is ultimately an investment in the future of Marfa. He took the time to praise the foundation's efforts to educate young Marfans about art and all the long-term residents Chinati has brought to town. He pointed toward the Robert Irwin installation, which he can see from his front porch. Before the Chinati Foundation rehabilitated the building, the former Fort Hospital was rotting and falling apart. Its roof caved in. Everything they fix is good for the town. Other people say, well, it's just art. But it looks clean. It looks nice. There's a lot of people that come and see it. A lot of people that rent a hotel or buy groceries. Everything helps. If it hadn't been for the art, there would probably still be nothing there. Early voting kicks off February 14th by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL, at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. Early voting for the March 1st primary election will take place from February 14th through 25th, with polling places located throughout the Tri-County area. Voters will nominate candidates to represent the Democratic and Republican parties in local county elections, district-based congressional and legislative offices, the State Board of Education, and judicial seats. Candidates for governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, land commissioner, agriculture commissioner, comptroller, and one of three seats on the Railroad Commission will also be on the ballot. The deadline to apply to vote by mail is February 18th. Applications must be received, not postmarked, by that date, and applicants are being encouraged to send their applications early to ensure it is received on time. Applications may be submitted in person or via email to county tax assessor collectors. Voters will need to present a valid form of identification, including a state-issued driver's license, U.S. passport, Texas election identification certificate, Texas personal identification card, Texas license to carry a handgun, U.S. military ID card with a personal photo, or a U.S. citizenship certificate with a personal photo. Early voting polls will be open weekdays, February 14 through 25, with the exception of President's Day, which falls on Monday, February 21st. In Presidio County, early voting will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., February 14th through 18th, and February 22nd through 25th, at the Marfa Visitor Center, USO Building, 302 South Highland Avenue, Marfa, Texas, 79843, and Presidio County Annex, Building C, 301 East O'Reilly Street, Presidio, Texas, 79845. In Brewster County, early voting will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., February 14th through 18th, February 22nd to 23rd, and 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., February 24th and 25th, at the Judge Val Clark Beard Office Complex. Old Library, 203 North 7th Street, Alpine, Texas, 79830. Remote voting in Brewster County will take place from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., February 22nd and 23rd, at the Marathon Community Center, 2nd and Avenue E, Marathon, Texas, 79842, and Red Patillo Community Center, Highway 118, Study Butte, Terlingua, Texas, 79852. In Jeff Davis County, early voting will run from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., February 14th through 18th, and February 22nd through 25th, at the District and County Clerk's Office, through the double green doors at 111 North Front Street, Fort Davis, Texas, 79734. During early voting, Voters may cast their ballots at any polling location in the county where they are registered to vote. On Election Day, voters must vote in the precinct in which they are registered to vote. Precincts are designated on voter cards. The Big Bend Sentinel will publish additional details on where to vote ahead of the March 1st primary election. Residents of Presidio County with questions about early voting may contact Natalia Williams at 432-729-4081. Brewster County residents should contact Laura Nussbaum at 432-837-6230. In Jeff Davis County, residents can contact Sheriff William Kitts at 432-837-6230.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, February 10th, 2022. Gray Mule Property to Receive Renovations by Nathan Hewer. The Gray Mule Saloon will soon be undergoing major renovations during its guaranteed closure over the next 60 days to preserve the historical property. The Fort Stockton City Council approved $138,000 renovation to the exterior and interior of the building at the group's special meeting on February 7th. T. Ingram Company was awarded the job, and it'll be completed over the next 6 to 8 weeks, according to the Fort Stockton director, Remy Ramos. The EDC has taken the opportunity to rehab an historic property while there is currently no tenant. We know there is not a tenant, and Mesa Vineyard's TABC license has been forfeited because of their bankruptcy. We now have 60 days before anything can happen. That's why we proceeded with construction. Fort Stockton 4A Economic Development Committee first passed the renovation bid at their meeting on February 1st before sending it to the City Council for approval. The renovations will feature the removal of the planters outside the building, which retain moisture, the replacement of gutters, fixture of the stucco inside and outside the building, new paint inside and outside, a slanting of the property's parking area, and a 16-inch retention wall on the corner of Callaghan Street and Main Street. The idea behind the renovations is to prevent long-term deterioration of the property caused by moisture retention due to the inadequate water runoff and fix what drainage has already occurred. What's creating the damage here is rain, snow, and water that's leaking from the gutter. These flower beds are retaining the moisture, which holds it against the stucco, then bleeds through the wall, causing the separation on the inside. Reopening of the tasting room for beverage consumption is still unknown to possibilities of how the bankruptcy court will handle the finances of the previous owner. Ramos explained that the approved renovations are primarily for the historic preservation of the first saloon in town, and if the business does reopen for beverage and or food consumption, all the better. It is a historical landmark that the EDC owns. This is not a CVB or a city property. If it becomes a building that we let the museum open across the street to show the original saloon in town, it has an historical landmarker and could be a tourist attraction. The ultimate goal would be to reopen it. Look for updates on the property in upcoming issues of the Pioneer. District 53 State Representative Andrew Moore held a meet-and-greet event at the Fort Stockton Convention Center on February 1st. The 8th generation Texan had previously visited Fort Stockton in November and spoke with elected officials and stakeholders in the community. Moore was first elected in 2014 to represent District 53 in the Texas House of Representatives. The district will soon cover Pecos County after redistricting occurred this past year. KFSB and Landmark Commission Integrate Meetings by Jeremy Gonzalez. The Keep Stockton Beautiful Board is now assembling with the Historical Landmark Commission for their regular meetings. The first joint meeting was held on February 2nd. The KHFSB meeting began with the swearing-in of Harry Gandhi and Brenda DeLeo as board members. The meeting held an orientation overviewing projects such as the Trash Off event, KHFSB art contest, and the Rio Street project, and more. The board approved current financial information, purchase of KHFSB merchandise, and the 2022 renewal of its Keep Texas Beautiful membership. Following the KHFSB meeting, the Historical Landmark Commission also began by conducting their orientation training. The commission appointed Ross Harper as their chairman and Dulcia Warren as their vice chairman. With new leadership in place, the commission went into the minutiae of identifying and registering local historic landmarks and further discussed the development of maps and an updated official list. With the two groups meeting shoulder to shoulder, beautification can now move forward for both the historic elements and future endeavors of Fort Stockton. Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, February 10th, 2022. Gray Mule Property to Receive Renovations by Nathan Hewer. The Gray Mule Saloon will soon be undergoing major renovations during its guaranteed closure over the next 60 days to preserve the historical property. The Fort Stockton City Council approved $138,000 renovation to the exterior and interior of the building at the group's special meeting on February 7th. T. Ingram Company was awarded the job, and it'll be completed over the next 6 to 8 weeks, according to the Fort Stockton director, Remy Ramos. The EDC has taken the opportunity to rehab an historic property while there is currently no tenant. We know there is not a tenant, and Mesa Vineyard's TABC license has been forfeited because of their bankruptcy. We now have 60 days before anything can happen. That's why we proceeded with construction. Fort Stockton 4A Economic Development Committee first passed the renovation bid at their meeting on February 1st before sending it to the City Council for approval. The renovations will feature the removal of the planters outside the building, which retain moisture, the replacement of gutters, fixture of the stucco inside and outside the building, new paint inside and outside, a slanting of the property's parking area, and a 16-inch retention wall on the corner of Callaghan Street and Main Street. The idea behind the renovations is to prevent long-term deterioration of the property caused by moisture retention due to the inadequate water runoff and fix what drainage has already occurred. What's creating the damage here is rain, snow, and water that's leaking from the gutter. These flower beds are retaining the moisture, which holds it against the stucco, then bleeds through the wall, causing the separation on the inside. Reopening of the tasting room for beverage consumption is still unknown to possibilities of how the bankruptcy court will handle the finances of the previous owner. Ramos explained that the approved renovations are primarily for the historic preservation of the first saloon in town, and if the business does reopen for beverage and or food consumption, all the better. It is a historical landmark that the EDC owns. This is not a CVB or city property. If it becomes a building that we let the museum open across the street to show the original saloon in town, it has an historical landmarker and could be a tourist attraction. The ultimate goal would be to reopen it. Look for updates on the property in upcoming issues of the Pioneer. Wildfire prevention. Texas A&M Forest Service is working to spread wildfire prevention messaging across Texas. Some parts of the state have recently received some winter precipitation. While any type of precipitation can reduce wildfire danger temporarily, areas with limited rain or snowfall will become dry again soon. Community members should remember that even after it rains or snows, obey local burn bans and regulations set by the city or county. And remember that rain or snow falls, wind blows, sun shines, and grass dries. Existing vegetation may be cured and will dry out more quickly than live vegetation. Follow the TAM FS Facebook page for daily wildfire prevention information at facebook.com/wildfireeducation.prevention.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, February 3rd. Pecos man jailed after chase causing brake check collision. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Pecos man remains in custody at the Ward County Jail on a $17,500 bond after he took deputies on a high-speed chase down Interstate 20 in a stolen vehicle and caused a crash. Reuben Leroy Holguin, age 20, was arrested last Thursday and charged with theft of property greater than $2,500 but less than $30,000, a state jail felony, and evading arrest detention with a vehicle, a third-degree felony. According to Ward County Sheriff Freran Valle, quote, dispatch received information of a stolen vehicle on January 23rd around 8:46 p.m. out of Pecos, which was then spotted heading westbound on Interstate 20 near mile marker 73, end quote. After verifying the vehicle was stolen, the deputy activated his overhead lights and attempted to stop the vehicle near mile marker 71. Quote, as the deputy was approaching the vehicle, the driver, identified as Holguin, fled at a high rate of speed, continuing westbound on I-20, approaching speeds of 126 miles per hour, and a pursuit ensued, he said. Holguin then exited the interstate near mile marker 58 and pulled over on the north side service road with his lights off. Quote, the deputy gave Holguin verbal commands to exit, and he once again fled the scene at a high rate of speed with his lights off. As he approached the 55-mile marker, Holguin slammed on his brakes, which caused the deputy to hit the vehicle, Valle said. Holguin also had two female juvenile passengers in the vehicle. Quote, the occupants of the vehicle would not comply with the deputy's commands and would not open the door, so deputies made forcible entry by breaking the driver's side window, he added. Emergency medical services were called to the scene to check the welfare of all three occupants of the vehicle and the deputy involved in the crash. All three individuals were taken into custody, and deputies later learned Holguin was not related to the juveniles. They were released back into the custody of their parents. The deputy's patrol vehicle only suffered minor damage and was still drivable. The case is still under investigation, and Holguin could face further charges. If convicted on both offenses, Holguin could face imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 2 years or more than 10 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Indictment handed down on gun-wielding robbery suspect. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The 143rd Ward County Judicial District Grand Jury indicted an El Paso man on charges related to a 2019 aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony, and was being held on a $150,000 bond. Fernando de la Peña, age 36, of El Paso, was indicted on the charge on September 15, 2021. According to the indictment, on April 2, 2019, De La Peña brandished a handgun and threatened Gerardo Robles Jr. while in the course of committing theft of property and attempting to obtain or maintain control of the property. The indictment further states De La Peña was previously convicted in Dallas County in January 2010 of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. De La Peña was released from the Ward County Jail after posting the bond. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of 5 to 99 years or life and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Baeza brought laughter and smiles to Monahans Police Department. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Officers of the Monahans Police Department Texas Department of Public Safety, Ward County Sheriff's Office, and members of the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department escorted the body of MPD dispatcher Jaime Baeza from the Midland International Space and Airport Tuesday to the funeral home in Fort Stockton. Pecos County Sheriff's Office and Fort Stockton Police Department picked up the escort at the Pecos County line and led the procession into Fort Stockton. Citizens of Monahans and Fort Stockton lined the streets to pay their respects to the 29-year-old dispatcher. Baeza passed away last Tuesday in a Katy hospital after a brief illness. She began in her role as an emergency dispatcher at MPD in 2019 after previously working for the Fort Stockton Police Department. MPD Captain Christopher Quintana said Baeza was the go-to person if you were having a bad day. Quote, "She could always make everybody smile and laugh," he said. Funeral services were held for Baeza Wednesday afternoon in Fort Stockton. State Senator candidate Sparks visits Monahans. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Kevin Sparks of Midland, Republican candidate for Texas Senator District 31, visited Monahans last Thursday and met with local business and community leaders for an afternoon and evening of listening to input from as many people as possible. Prior to the redistricting dictated by the 2020 census, Ward County was part of Senate District 28, but is now part of District 31. The District 31 senatorial seat is currently held by Kel Seliger of Amarillo, who is not seeking re-election. Three candidates, in addition to Sparks, have filed for the post, all on the Republican primary ballot. Cahoma ISD trustee and business owner Stormy Bradley has filed along with last-minute filings by retired FBI agent Tim Reed of Amarillo and attorney Jesse Quackenbush of Odessa. Sparks, his wife Jill, youngest son Grant, and other staffers joined community members in the boardroom of the Ward County Credit Union, Ward County Sheriff's Office, Tejas Bank, Transformative Learning Academy, Ward County Arena, PJ's Coffee, and ended the day at the Ward County Livestock Show. In an interview with the Monahans News, Sparks discussed some of the key points of his campaign. He is advocating reducing regulation and spending. Quote, "The inclination of government is to grow. I am for less government by bringing more efficiency, which will result in a more sustainable government long term. Any organization, government, or business becomes more difficult to manage the larger it gets. We need to have the lowest cost of government possible. My family and I have been in the oil and gas industry for over 50 years, and I understand this very well and know how to improve efficiency and make it happen," end quote. In discussing education, Sparks said, quote, "Education is the largest part of our budget, and we are not receiving the benefit that we should be getting. We need to persuade education to provide more options for our students. The recapture Robin Hood method of school funding is not a fair program. The funding structure needs to be changed. I am also for lowering or eliminating property tax. There are other sources of tax revenue. Revenue sources have increased about 8% per year for the past 10 years. That creates an extra $67 billion per year. We can take that money and buy down property tax. It is doable. Property tax goes up every year and is the largest part of a mortgage payment in many cases. It will be challenging, but it is doable," end quote. Sparks also addressed border security. Quote, "We need to shut down all borders with Mexico. This would bring Mexico to the table to help with the influx of illegals. It will come at great cost and will cause economic pain short term. Our borders need to be shut down completely, both economically and physically. We need to finish the wall. I commend Governor Abbott for what he is doing. End quote. He is also a strong supporter of protecting life and is a strong anti-abortion advocate. He supports the Texas Heartbeat Act passed in the last legislative session. Quote, I believe that life begins at inception and we need to protect life, he said. Asked why people should vote for him, he said, quote, of the 31 Senate districts in the state, none of these senators come from the oil and gas industry. I would bring that experience to the Senate. I have been a businessman in the oil industry for over 35 years. I am now the president of Discovery Operating Incorporated. I am an entrepreneur and have experience in real estate as well. I have a diverse background, and my experience is over a wide spectrum of endeavors. End quote. Discovery Operating Incorporated, a family-owned and operated oil and gas company in Midland, has created hundreds of local jobs over almost 50 years. Sparks serves as president of the organization. Kevin and his wife Jill, formerly Jill Nesbitt, a native of Monahans, have invested in their community for over 30 years as Young Life and church leaders and board members of local nonprofits. The Sparks are also small group leaders to young couples rearing their own families. They have four adult children and are active members of Stonegate Fellowship Church, where he currently serves as an elder. A Nurse's Tale, Mom Helps Teach Daughter. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Registered nurse Alberta Cartwright has worked 50 years at Ward Memorial Hospital, but that is not the end of this story, as it began anew when daughter Eureka Royce joined her the first of this year as an RN in the surgery department. A retirement celebration was held for Alberta last Friday, but odds are she won't really retire, but will likely stay on in an as-needed capacity. Hospital surgeon Sammy Day didn't go to the celebration as he said, quote, you're not retiring, you'll be back, end quote. That may be prophetic, as her last official day of work was Monday, January 31st, but she had already been called back to work on Tuesday. Alberta has lived in Monahans all of her life and graduated from Monahans High School in 1970. She received her LVN status from Odessa College and started working as a nurse's aide while attending OC. She worked as an LVN until 1983, when she earned her registered nurse's degree, also from Odessa College. Quote, I have always liked it here because this is a small hospital and I have worked all over. I like the diversity, she said. She worked in the nursery, obstetrics, med-surg, hospital floor, surgery, ICU, labor and delivery, and emergency room as a trauma coordinator. Cartwright also remembered the tornado that destroyed the hospital on April 19, 1977. Quote, the tornado hit around 12:30 p.m. It looked like there were two twisters that appeared to merge into one. We were told there were three, but I only saw the two. At first, it looked more like smoke, and it looked like a house on fire. Quote, but we did have enough time to be able to get the patients into the hallways for safety. It was unreal, and we had plenty of time. It was almost like everything was in slow motion. I remember it sounded like a freight train. End quote. Of the many pleasant memories Alberta has of working in the hospital, the one thing she liked the most was the people. Quote, that is my favorite thing. I love interacting with people. The thing I liked the least was working long-term care. End quote. Quote, when Dr. Davenport left a few years ago, I thought about retiring then. But Dr. Day came on board, and he is so wonderful to work with, so I stayed around, she said. Quote, nurses have changed over the years. They don't seem to have the same level of respect that we did. I don't think it's intentional, and don't mean that in a bad way. It's just the way things are today. more a product of our environment and difference in generation, end quote. She said she was shy, but now enjoys talking to people. Her love of interacting with people carries over to her off time. Quote, I love working with kids, and I teach a Sunday school class, end quote. Alberta married Roy Lee Cartwright on June 1, 1970. The couple had three daughters, Mavis Houston of San Antonio, Chelsea Jackson of Grand Falls, and Eureka Royce of Monahans. Roy Lee died of COVID-19 on December 2, 2020. Daughter Eureka now works alongside her mom in the surgery department. She is also a graduate of Monahans High School, receiving her diploma in 2008. She earned her LVN from the LVN program at the Monahans campus of Odessa College in 2012. After earning her LVN, she worked as an LVN at the prison in Pecos. Quote, in the prison, I worked emergency, clinical, and med-surg, and I was the quality assurance nurse. I actually liked it, but things were much more security-minded than here. For example, at the prison, you would never leave an inmate alone. That is not unusual here, end quote. She held that position for 9 years. She completed her RN training in December 2021. Quote, as soon as I got my RN, I resigned from Pecos and started here at Ward Memorial Hospital in January. I wanted to be closer to home, and the back-and-forth drive to Pecos every day really got old, end quote. She recalls, quote, I pretty much grew up in the hospital. I was here almost every day. I would come to the hospital before school and after school most days. Royce has two children, 11-year-old Keandre and 8-year-old Cambry. Quote, I enjoy watching my kids play sports. Keandre is in almost all of the sports, and Cambry loves dance and is on the Out West dance group, she said. She likes working in surgery. Quote, Dr. Day is great. He is not only professional, but is patient and likes to teach, end quote. Asked if her mom influenced her decision to go into nursing, Eureka said, quote, she obviously influenced me. I thought she would be easy to work with, but no, no, no. She doesn't cut me any slack, she said with a bright smile and a laugh. Quote, I enjoy being taught by the best, my mom, end quote.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.